Hello, and welcome to the Queen's Observatory Fast Radio Bursts. I am Connor Stone, here with my co-host, Nikhil Arora. It is our mission to bring exciting space news hot off the telescope and into your ears. One way or another, the Queen's Observatory has continued its practice of sharing the wonders of the universe since 1857. Thank you for joining us in this long-running tradition. Here at Fast Radio Bursts, we will answer your questions, interview astronomers, and dive deep into breaking research. From low Earth orbit to the clouds of Venus, from Betelgeuse to colliding black holes, it's a big universe to talk about, so let's get started.
And welcome back to Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. I'm your host, Nick Arora, and I am, as always, joined by the very delightful and the very knowledgeable, if I might say, Connor Stone. Connor, how are you doing today?
Hi, Nick. Feeling very knowledgeable.
Great. I guess spring is on the horizon. So I guess spring generally is the start of new beginnings. So I guess this is a very great time to start a new series. So just as a reminder to people, we just finished our series on the living universe, where we explored life in the universe and how we might go about looking for it. Today, we actually change gears a little bit and actually look at the history of the universe. We're calling this series a Universal Chronicle. Well, we actually will go through different key periods in the universe's lifetime and sort of open them up a bit and give some more information and the cool facts about them, if I can say it that way. Of course, there is a disclaimer over here. When we are looking back into the universe's past, it's not a year or 2 years, it's billions of years. So we are going to be working with large numbers. As I like to say to people in astronomy, it's either very, very small numbers or it's very, very large numbers. Nothing comes in the middle. So today we're going to be looking back billions of years to see how the ball got rolling with where we are today. Just as a reminder, our listeners would be noticing that this is not an interview podcast. We have something special in the mix right now, given the changes that are happening here at the Queen's Observatory. So instead, we're actually jumping right into a science series right now, or the ultra-fast radio burst, as we like to call it, and we will have an interview for you soon enough. So the plan for today is to get started, get our talk discussing about how did the baby universe look like, and how did the baby universe come to be. But for now, I guess, Connor, it's a great idea to get this stage set. What are we looking at? And what are the really interesting stuff that we're going to be glossing over, I guess, or covering, in that matter of fact. So tell us a little bit more about the plan for this series, Connor.
Right. So this series, we're planning to really go from as early as science can really tell us about the beginning of the universe, right up until the present day. And we're going to do it all in two relatively short episodes. So to say things are going to move fast is a bit of an understatement.
Right.
There's tons of really interesting things that happen throughout the whole history of the universe. And so the main idea is to use this series, these two episodes, to give people an overarching understanding of the timeline of the universe, so that other things make sense.
Right.
In our Living Universe series, for example, we talked about the possibility of really ancient life, life that had been around for billions of years before us, and we explained why that was actually kind of unlikely. And the reasons for it were to do with the progression of planets in our universe, basically the timeline of when they start appearing. And to understand that better, you really need to have an understanding of the whole timeline of the universe. So what we realized is that everything else about the universe makes a lot more sense once you have an overarching understanding of the timeline.
Great. So how far back are we turning the clock? Are we going exactly to time t equals zero, or where are we starting?
Right. So the universe is about 13.8 billion years old as of today. Let's say today. Sure. So
the answer is not going to be very different tomorrow.
No. So the universe is very old, but not infinitely old. So there is a T equals zero. The tricky thing is we can't say exactly when that T equals zero was, but because of how we can follow the dynamics of the universe and just basic particle physics, we can actually understand what the universe would have been like fractions of a second after it first got started. So the beginning of this series, we're going to actually have very precise timelines relative to T equals zero, whenever that was. But as we go further and further along, things get a little more fuzzy and imprecise. And something you'll learn is we actually know more about the beginning and the end of the universe than we do about the middle. So that'll be a theme mostly in the second episode.
Okay. However, we are not going to talk about the end of the universe, right?
Well, by the end, I just mean what it's like today.
Right. Okay. Oh, but by the way, here's this plug. We have talked about the end of the universe in How to Destroy the Universe series. So technically, we're actually connecting the dots over here to some extent between series.
That's true. That's why we're not doing End of Universe now, because we kind of already did it as part of a different series. So we're just going to do right up until the modern age, 2022.
Great. All right. So 13 billion years ago from today, exactly today, this happened.
Yeah. So a funny thing to mention is as soon as you say that the beginning of the universe was around 13.8 billion years, a really obvious question, a really natural question is to ask, what happened just before that? What was the universe like just before the universe got started? Which is a weird question to ask, but totally valid. The problem is, at least as far as the current laws of physics as we know them go, you can't really ask what happened before the Big Bang. It's kind of like asking what's north of the North Pole. You've reached the point where time started, so you can't ask what happened before time started. You can't ask what's more north than the North Pole. So that's one quirk about the beginning of the universe. And a second quirk is that at the early stages of the universe, time and temperature and all sorts of other parts of how we understand the world around us were actually entirely interchangeable. It's equivalent to say the universe was 1 second old and the universe was 10 billion degrees Celsius.
It's just reversed. So the hotter it is, the younger it is.
Yeah.
The cooler it is, the older the universe we're talking about. Great.
Yeah, you can even do the same thing today. The universe is like 2.7 degrees Kelvin or minus 270 degrees Celsius. Yeah. So the universe and time and the temperature are actually fundamentally connected to each other, but that connection is very strong at the beginning.
I mean, one thing that maybe is worth pointing out over here, when we're talking about temperatures of the universe, we're actually just talking about the average temperature of the universe. There are, of course, places in the universe, like at the center of our sun or on Earth, where, of course, the temperature is not 270 degrees Celsius.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, probably for the right reasons. But when we are talking about the temperature of the universe, we really are averaging over the whole wide universe to get a number to make our lives easy. All right. So Big Bang happened 13 billion years ago. What did it look like?
Well, so it was called the Big Bang for a reason. It would have been the most cataclysmic explosion ever. But it wouldn't really look like an explosion that you see in the movies. Like there wasn't fire everywhere and debris. In fact, it was extremely smooth. It was a very organized explosion. So it was more like the center of the sun, which you can imagine being like crushingly, intensely hot, but it's hot everywhere. There isn't one hot spot much hotter than the next. The fluctuations would have been very, very tiny. They would have come out as a result of like quantum fluctuations. So yes, the universe at the very first few moments would have looked like the most incredible, blindingly bright, intense pressure explosion ever.
Yeah.
And to go into any more detail, we're going to have to start actually specifying the time period when things happened, because the early universe was really moving fast.
Okay, great. So how far back can we confidently say what happened during the Big Bang?
So our ability to describe what happens during the Big Bang sort of at different time periods has different levels of specificity. The absolute limit where you could not say anything more detailed would be called the Planck epoch. From t equals zero up to the end of the Planck epoch, you can't make any confident statements, because that is the quantum limit of a time step.
How big is a Planck epoch, Connor?
About 1 10 million billion billion billionth of a second.
Okay.
After t equals zero.
So t equals zero.
Well, pretty close if you're going to round. So we certainly have no idea what happened earlier than that. And then as we go forward, we get more and more confident about what would happen. So if we go all the way up to a billion, 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 billionth of a second, that's about the point when the three primary forces in our standard model of physics, the electric, weak, and strong forces, they would have all started to separate from one unified force, which is a weird thing to say, like how do forces merge? But the physics of it actually is kind of straightforward. We don't know how it would have happened for gravity, so that can introduce a wrinkle. But for the standard model forces, they are pretty well organized.
May I just bump in here very quickly? When Connor says the physics is kind of straightforward, he is of course saying that with a assumption of about 4 to 6 years of good amount of physics and education that you have for yourself. Please don't try this at home.
Okay, yes, it's pretty straightforward if you have a few degrees in physics.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
All right, moving forward.
Okay, so shortly after that point, we get inflation. It's a time period when the universe would have expanded very rapidly. We actually also did a full podcast on this. It was an interview with Simran Nerval. In that episode, you'll see that our understanding of inflation is very interesting. It's one of those things where, like, we can see a shattered lamp on the floor. We know that someone must have knocked it over. We know that inflation must have happened, but some of the details are a little fuzzy. So Simran actually studies different models of how inflation could have gone and tries to figure out which one is the most realistic. And it's sort of an interesting field of physics in trying to understand how inflation would have worked. But we do know that it happened, and it stretched out the universe at unimaginable speed, very, very quickly, smoothing things out even further.
Yeah. Quickly here, unimaginable speeds here. Once again, these are actually most likely speeds faster than the speed of light. So these are, without going into the depth of it, breaking some of our current laws of physics today. But they must have been like that, or we need another model for the universe.
Well, I mean, it's okay for space to expand faster than the speed of light. It's just particles that can't move faster than the speed of light. Anyway, so we're going to go all the way forward in time to a trillionth of a second.
Yeah, moving really fast here.
So we're up to a trillionth of a second, and the universe would start to take on properties that are more recognizable to the standard model of physics that one can learn in undergrad and which we can test in the lab. I say the lab because there's really only one lab that can test the universe at this time. That's the Large Hadron Collider. And it can recreate the conditions that would have been around about this time at about a trillionth of a second.
Okay. Looks like we're moving. I mean, I guess it's worth sort of appreciating how much happened in like the first trillionth of a second. I mean, this is slower than, or this is faster than the blink of an eye. And so much has already happened. And of course, yeah, I guess it's worth appreciating that. Well, now that the things are getting interesting, I have to be the Debbie Downer here and say, let's take our first break for now. But when we come back, we'll talk about how the Big Bang set the stage actually for more amazing stuff in the universe to happen and make the universe look like it did today. We'll be back.
Hello there. I'm just stopping by to quickly let you know that the Queen's Observatory is always here to answer your space questions. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and our website. Links to all of these are in the podcast description. We're always happy to talk about the universe, and if you ask a really big question, we just might have to do a podcast about it. I would also like to mention some of the other great resources out there. In the podcast description, you will find links to the McDonald Institute, the Royal Astronomical Society, and the Astronomy on Tap program. They are all excellent programs to bring the universe down to Earth. And with that, let's get back to it.
And welcome back to Queen's Observatory's Faster Universe. We are zipping by through the universe, the history of the universe right now, and we've made it to a trillionth of a second out of 13.8 billion years. So let's keep moving, Connor. So I'm guessing at this point, the universe is very hot and it's expanding really fast. What's going on with the particles that essentially make up our universe?
Right. So yeah, the universe is at about a trillionth of a second, which, as I mentioned, is directly connected to temperature. So we're at about 1,000 trillion degrees Celsius at this point, which is actually too hot for particles to exist yet. Particles, as aside from the most fundamental particles, which obviously can't be broken up further, they would still have too much energy right now to form into the larger particles that we actually interact with. And if any of them were able to bind together, a gamma ray or some very energetic particle would zip by and just break them up. So we have to wait until all the way up to about a 10,000th of a second when the universe started to cool down. It's only a mild 10 billion degrees at this point.
A beautiful beach day, might I just say. Yeah.
And at this point, we could start to get protons and neutrons. These are some of the particles that we're more familiar with. These are building blocks for just about all the atoms. Well, actually, exactly all of the atoms that we know about. So finally, the universe has cooled enough for these to form. But in order to get anything more complicated, we're going to need the protons and neutrons to actually bind together as well to form even more complicated particles. But I should mention that once we go up to about 1 second after the beginning of the universe, there's an important moment, neutrino decoupling. So neutrinos are these very ghostly particles that almost never interact with anything. But up until 1 second, the universe was actually so dense that even neutrinos were bouncing off everything. But at about 1 second, they quickly tail off and are able to stream off in any direction they like, because the universe is now too wispy. It's only 10 billion degrees. It's not hot enough to really catch their attention. Right. So they can just carry on their own way. And I always have to mention where neutrinos are relevant, of course, because here at Queen's University, we are famous for neutrinos, thanks to Art MacDonald winning a Nobel Prize with the Snow Lab experiment and the like hundreds of people that were involved in that experiment. They solved a long-standing problem in neutrino physics where they tried to understand the mass of neutrinos. Spoiler alert, they do have mass, but we do not yet know how much.
Yep. I mean, I guess we can't forget Art MacDonald when we're talking about neutrinos. All right. So now that the protons and neutrons are together, I'm guessing we're moving on to looking at atoms that we see today, right?
Not quite.
No.
So As the universe continues to expand, we get up to 10 seconds after the beginning of the universe, and it would be about 100 million degrees. That's when we start to form atoms. So we have to wait a little bit, but now we're 10 seconds in, we're getting atoms, but the atoms aren't the ones that we mostly see around us today. That's really just hydrogen, helium, and a tiny bit of lithium being produced at this stage in the universe. So why the universe only creates those few? It has to do with the short time period, because everything's moving so fast in the universe, we actually don't have enough time to build our way up to the larger atoms before the universe thins out enough that these atoms stop colliding with each other enough to really form larger atoms. So we'll have to look at a later episode, and we'll see where all the other atoms come from.
Okay. Has the universe actually formed into its initial shape?
Well, not quite yet.
Hey, I'm going to quit, Connor. I'm never asking you that question ever again.
So, for now, the universe ends up being a little bit boring for a couple hours. I mean, things have been moving so fast, I guess it needed a little bit of a break. The universe at this stage is basically a ball of very, very uniform plasma. It's uniform to within a factor of 100,000. So from one end of the universe to the next, you really don't expect much of a temperature difference to within more than 100,000th of a degree. So an example, sort of as a reference point for how smooth of a universe that is, we could consider the surface of the Earth. And if the Earth was as smooth as the universe was at that point, then our tallest mountain would be only 100 meters tall, not 8 kilometers. That's sort of a reference for how smooth the universe was. Now, the next stage after we get through this boring phase of just ball of plasma, that is called recombination. So when the universe cools to just 4,000 degrees Kelvin, we're starting to look at temperatures just below the surface temperature of the sun.
Yeah.
And if you've ever looked at the sun, which don't do that, if you've ever looked at the sun, you'll notice that...
With proper equipment,
sure. You'll notice that the sun is not transparent. You can't see through the sun, but you can see through the area just above the sun. So the universe you can almost think of as moving from being like the surface of the sun to being like just above the surface of the sun. Except through the whole universe instead of at the center of our solar system. Nah. And so what happens at these temperatures, the universe would have gone from opaque, where light can't travel very far before it bumps into something, to suddenly being transparent. That would happen about 300,000 years after the beginning of the universe. So it took a little while to get there, but the universe cooled down enough that suddenly the universe became transparent. And just like those neutrinos from before, all the light could just stream off in every direction, wherever it wants to go. That's a pretty big change for the universe. And it was so big, we can actually still see it today. There are telescopes that can see this light that just started streaming off in every direction way back at 300,000 years after the beginning of the universe. We call this the cosmic microwave background. And you can actually see it for yourself. If you have an old TV, just change it to between channels where you get all that static. And a couple percent of that static comes from the cosmic microwave background. And you could also, instead of flipping your channel to flipping to between channels, you could instead build a multi-million dollar satellite and send it to space and make much more precise measurements of this background, which... actually, they have done. Ironically, it looks like TV static when you look at it. But there's a huge amount of information in there. And that information is sort of the blueprint beginning of our universe. So it tells us a lot about the high-level properties of our universe. We can actually measure from this staticky noise exactly how much dark matter there was in the universe at that point, which is really cool.
Oh, yeah, all of this does sound very interesting. Maybe I think this is a good place to actually dive a little deeper into how do we know all this, in the sense that what are the kind of experiments that were put together to understand and prove how the universe looked 300,000 odd years ago. I mean, because clearly we don't have a camera. A person holding a camera 300,000 years ago.
Exactly. It's kind of bizarre for, like, I've just described with relative precision, like, oh, this happened at 1 second after the beginning of the universe. This thing happened at 1 hour after the beginning of the universe. And it was 10 billion degrees at this time. So it's kind of weird to talk with such precision about something that happened so long ago. And the way that we've been able to build up this picture of the early universe is with a whole bunch of different experiments coming together and people piecing together the logic of what must have happened. For some of it, we can just see it. Like I said, the cosmic microwave background, we can actually put a telescope up in space and look at the cosmic microwave background. We can look at this light, which has been traveling through the universe for 13.8 minus 300,000 billion years.
So 13.8 billion years.
Pretty much. So we can look at this light, which has been streaming through the universe for so long and finally landed near Earth on our telescope. and we can just see it for ourselves. But just like looking into the sun is kind of impossible, looking further back than that is also impossible with light because the universe was opaque at that point. So we can try and recreate the conditions of the early universe. The Large Hadron Collider, that can actually collide atoms so intensely that it recreates some of the temperature and pressure conditions that would have existed at the beginning of the universe. So we can actually sort of almost rewind the clock within a certain area and study it very, very closely. So we can remake what was happening at that time. And by doing a lot of experiments like that, and a lot of connecting the dots, we can actually model the physics of what the universe would have been like under these incredible temperature and pressure conditions and follow through what the physics would say. If I had a whole bunch of particles at a really high energy, how are they going to bounce off of each other? It turns out that a lot of the really specific predictions, like the exact percentages of hydrogen, helium, lithium, and so on, these are actually pretty straightforward to calculate. In fact, I did it as part of a class in grad school. You could say it was easy. You have to have a degree in physics before you're going to want to take on a project like that. But it was done on my laptop in a matter of a few days. So it's not a critically difficult problem. It's a problem which a lot of people have the ability to tackle.
Yeah, I mean, today it's become more of a problem like this has become more of a assignment question, right? Really.
Yeah.
But it kind of shows you what our understanding is of the universe today, that something as structural, if I can say that, as the abundance of hydrogen, helium, and lithium in the universe is so precisely known that we can actually share it with students just coming into physics and tell them this is how it was made.
Yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't mention one thing. The exact percentage of lithium. It's still a bit of a pin that we're working on. But in general, yes, this is very...
Mostly we know it.
This is pretty much an assignment question now, because we've built up such an understanding of how this particle physics works.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we made it to about 300,000 years into the birth of the universe. I guess this is a good place to stop now. And when we come back, come back as in our next episode. So when we return in our next episode, we will actually make our way through the other 13.8 billion years that are remaining right now.
Yeah, there's a lot that happened at the beginning, and then things kind of slowed out. Yeah. You may have noticed the timescales as well went from a billion, 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 billionth of a second to 1 second to 300,000 years very quickly, and it carries on like that.
Yeah. However, some fairly interesting things do happen, maybe like at around a billion years, 5 billion years, 10 billion years kind of thing. So we are going to discuss that, and we are going to see formation of structure in the universe, structure that we call galaxies and solar systems and planets today. But for now, thank you, Connor, for doing this. And that is all from us here at the Queen's Observatory Fast Radio Burst. And we will see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. We hope you enjoyed this walk through the universe. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact us via email at queensuobservatory@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter as the Queen's University Observatory to stay up to date. If you like this podcast, you can help us by leaving a review and sharing it with your friends. This will help us become more visible and spread the wonders of the universe to more people. That is all from us. We'll be back again with another exciting topic in astronomy.